baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Good morning and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford and he's back, baby. He's still got his bad taco over his coughing, snotty face. But Adam Mack joins us.
You know what they say.
A little better, bud.
Yeah, I'm feeling better. I don't look any better. So hence the bad taco picture still today. Nobody needs to see the dark circles under my eyes. And this way, when I have to clear my sinuses or cough, I can just mute myself and make a big gross display secretly behind the camera.
Secretly behind the camera. That's right. Which is really the audio people's experience all the time. So, yes, exactly. Which, by the way, the audio side of stuff, you can get this podcast wherever you get your high quality podcast, right? Spotify, Apple, all that good stuff. But I know we hit record to start the intro here. So you audio folks even get the first 20 seconds of us boneheads getting into the show. Listen to that, eh? I know it's funny because we were just talking to on Long Toss on the audio side. Which is funny, Adam, because you cut it off on the video side, but on the audio side, it's me being like, the first 20 seconds is me being like, there's an echo. I'm sure there's an echo. Can somebody tell me if there's an echo on your end?
You're killing me.
There, I'm slowly killing my co-host.
You're just trying to prove I'm sick.
So this is the Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon. This is where we comb through the week's interactions from you, the listener. We do so on the comments on YouTube. Of course, you can always reach out on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast or Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. Our Discord grows daily. So welcome to all of the new members to the Discord. Of course, there's a link for that in the show notes. It is always free. And it is always happening. It has been very, very busy, talkative baseball, Blue Jays place over the last couple weeks here with all the speculation going on. And then, of course, we always appreciate it and appreciate the Patreon in general. And if you are interested in joining, it's $4 a month. And it does. We've actually got a new system coming out right away here where we're offering a little bit more to Patreon. But, of course, if you are on Patreon, you always get the bump to the head of the line on the mailbag. So we've got a couple questions there from our Patreon. All right, let's get into it, Adam.
All right. First one was a snarky one we got from Twitter. So at Farmer Tortoise tweeted us and said, hey, at Walk Off Podcast, please, Scott, could you stop using the tag question right so often?
Which is true. It is a crutch phrase. So I'm an old radio guy and there's a thing called crutch phrases. And it's where a DJ or an announcer will use a certain phrase or term excessively. I'm curious when I'm on interviews. I've caught that. I'm trying to reduce. I'm curious. right is one. And it's funny because Tortoise Farmer is actually a longtime listener. And I do actually appreciate him reaching out. As snarky as it may have sounded, I didn't catch that. And then I listened back to last night's one episode with Craig and I, and sure enough, I'm saying right too much.
Buddy, for anybody who thinks you say right too much, go back and listen to some of our old interviews from the first year and a half of this show and count how many times you and I verbally we're nodding along out loud in agreement as we're listening, right? Because like that's
it's so annoying.
Conversationally is very good and it's polite, but when you're recording an interview, it is not good listening experience for anybody else to hear us constantly going, it's like just shut up.
We've come a long way, Adam.
That's my point.
I mean, we're not perfect by any means and still have a long way to go. And so we truly do appreciate when guys like Tortoise Farmer reach out and say, hey, you know what? You're using this phrase too much. By the way, I don't need this all the time, everybody. So if you're like going to start really dissecting and picking this apart, not what I'm after. But yeah, feel free to reach out if there's one particular phrase where I'm driving you nuts with it. The last
just
thing
no mustard tiger has a whole note in his phone that he's just been sitting on going, nah, I better not send this in. But now he's thinking, okay, they want the creative criticism. So sorry, constructive criticism. We don't want creative criticism. All right. Anyways, thanks for that one. Next one came in on YouTube. So they commented on our conversation with Craig Ballard from yesterday. So Scott Carter says, I like Craig, but I find that I disagree with him a lot. And that's why we love Craig.
It is why we love
Craig. We've had conversations about this frequently, and that's...
off air. It's just you and I being like, you know what?
You and I agree too often. We get along great, but that isn't the best entertainment, right? It doesn't need to be the high five circle agreement hour. Like, that was a terrible name for a show. Agreed, as you currently agree with me. Well done, well done. Anyways, Craig commented on this comment, and this one cracked me up. He said, you had me at, I like Craig. Well done, Craig.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is one thing I do really love about Craig Ballard is that he has different views and different takes, but they're always very well supported and well thought out. So even if I do disagree with it, I can see where he's coming from and I can even get behind it if it happens type of idea. So no, love having a different perspective. And Craig is just that.
Totally. He's our Stephen A. Smith, if you will.
There.
Right. All right.
Don't say right.
We've gone off the rails. That's my crutch. Okay, today's episode brought to you by our Patreon, as Scott mentioned off the top, $4 a month gets you all the priority questions submitted for mailbag. Today we have quite a bit of action from the Patreon. So first and foremost, Michael Meyer commented on our Zach Britton early access interview, which, by the way, is a good opportunity for us to mention the fact that as a perk for our Patreon, you do get early access to our interviews. And furthermore, we have quite a few more interviews coming up this week. We have, what, three lined up this week?
We do. So tomorrow morning, we talk to Ryan Boyer, pitcher with the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. We also talk with Troy Watson on Thursday morning. He is also a pitcher in the Blue Jays organization, most likely slated to start with AAA Buffalo Bison next season, but he may get the start at AA before being bumped up. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, two really good guys that we haven't had on the show before, so excited to talk to them there. And then looks like we've locked down a couple more prospects for next week as well. So this is the thing, right? Adam always needs to take the time to edit it. And when we release it, it tends to be three days to a week after the interview. So if you want that first hand access, Patreon is the way to do it. And then you have access literally minutes after we're finished doing the interview.
There you go. This is a fun little update here. I was pretty thrilled. John Dick finally got his Jose Berríos jersey.
Oh, my goodness.
This was a contest we ran. We do run irregular promotions through our Patreon where we do giveaways. There was the baseball cards. I think Ian won that one.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Jose Berríos jersey, which I just stumbled across at a thrift store. And I was like, oh, this is phenomenal. So John Dick got the freebie there, but then I sent it out. I'm pretty sure.
I bet you September. 6 weeks ago, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and still hadn't ever got it. So we're getting ready to, we're trying to come up with another way to restore justice in a way and, you know, get him a shirt or a mug or something. But anyways, Canada Post finally delivered the jersey yesterday. So we're off the hook. We just saved like $6 on merchandise. We're not going to have to send John. So it's a win for us too.
All right. Canada Post. Sometimes they deliver.
Yeah, that was the original slogan. They put it on the stamp, I think. Okay, and then last one here. This is a real comment. This one comes from Wyatt. It says, hey, fellas, if you're doing a Monday mailbag, I have a couple easy ones for you. When is the next episode of Long Toss? I like hearing from Garth, Jen, and the others, and it seems like it's been a while since the last episode. So let's
get
to that
one first. Which was a message for Friday, correct?
Yeah, Friday or Saturday. So we did one on like a day later. So There you go. That worked out good.
Which is kind of cool, Adam, because it was, you know what, like we always did, for those of you who are new to the channel, we always did a long toss, we'd call it, which would be Sunday afternoon after the Jays game. And we would bring in content creators from different teams or from around baseball and would talk Blue Jays and baseball in general. And it's like a 2-hour long form type of
table.
Show.
Yeah.
And we'd run it live on YouTube. So we would have commenters within the show, real time type of thing. And then we would re-release it on Monday morning. But obviously, we're still trying to create content every single day here, but there just isn't enough happening in the baseball world for us to have justified doing Long Toss every single week. So we decided we'd do it a month, and it had been a while. And this was our first one since the season ended. And I was just blown away, dude, by how many people tuned in. Like, we had close to 60 people live. And then we also had, I think we're pushing 1,000 views on YouTube. And I know we had audio people reaching out being like, make sure you post it on audio, because that is something we'll forget to do sometimes. But no, it's great to see the interest in it.
I do want to say 1,000 views doesn't sound like a lot, but for 1,000 people to sit, and I could check the algorithm on this, to sit through 2 hours of a show, that's significant, right? It's a lot easier for people to click on a 5-minute clip than it is to sit through a 2-hour show. So the fact
pretty that we humbling. It's kind of cool. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So there's that. Anyways, Long Toss. We'll do probably get to one in September or in December, and then maybe January, February. I think February was last year when we started doing them weekly.
Yeah, and probably go weekly in February. So, yeah. I know I reached out to a friend of the show, Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet, and was trying to convince him to come on in December. And he was just like, boys, thank you so much for reaching out. Always love doing the show, but I am taking a stand on not doing anything for 6 weeks. As it's been a long baseball season, which is very fair. And it was pretty cool to see Arden Zwelling too move up the ranks, man. Like, we were watching him down on the field during the World Series interviewing guys, which is pretty darn cool. Pretty cool. Like, I really look forward to when we finally can have him back on and just pick his brain on that experience in general.
Yeah, very cool. All right, last part here comes from Wyatt as well. When you guys close your eyes and say the words Toronto Blue Jays, who or what comes to mind? Show keeps getting better and better. Look forward to more off-season content. So thanks for the comment, Wyatt, and the support on Patreon as always. Mm-hmm. Toronto Blue Jays, Scott, who or what comes to mind for you?
So for me, when I was in grade 4, the Blue Jays won the World Series in 1992. And I just remember the class. I was in French immersion. It was a small class of about 15, and literally it was Blue Jays all the time. It was insane. Grand Prairie, Alberta. And literally all everyone in the class wanted to talk about was Blue Jays baseball. And John Olerud was my absolute favorite. Like, I would have taken a bullet for the dude at 10 years old. I loved him so much. So for my birthday, my parents went out and they got a poster of Robbie Alomar and John Olerud. And then they had it mounted on a background, and give me 1 second here.
Ooh, are we gonna get to see it?
But this,
oh my gosh,
that's my Johnny O right there.
Very nice.
And honestly, this is literally this picture right here, this poster. When I think of the Toronto Blue Jays and close my eyes, that's what I visualize. How about yourself, buddy?
Ooh, well, that's a much better story than I have to offer up.
I should have went last.
No. I should have went last. For me, I guess if I go back to childhood, it's those ugly black and silver and electric blue jerseys. No. This is my childhood story from when I was younger, because I'm a little bit younger than So it's yes. Eric Hinsky, it's Vernon Wells, right. It's Orlando Hudson. It's those terrible, because this was like right around like the unveil of the new age logo. And just like my frustration with how my favorite team in all of sports had my least favorite logo. And there was just such a conflict there internally. I love
the new when you were in the same age era as I was, they were shipping out Delgado and Sean Green.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a much different time to learn how to be a Blue Jays fan. I had heard about the championships that were won, you know, before I was even in kindergarten. But alas, there it is. Yeah, there you go.
Feel free to drop a comment, by the way, gang, as to when you close your eyes, what you visualize when you see the Toronto Blue Jays. That's kind of a cool little exercise.
Ooh, I do have a good new favorite Blue Jays memory, though, in this moment. It is watching the home run derby from a few years ago with my daughter, who was, I think, like 7 or 8 at the time, and getting her amped up as Vladdy's hitting like 1,000 home runs, just like nonstop. And she was so pumped and excited. I got a video of it. Maybe I'll throw it up in the Discord later, but yeah, pretty exciting times. I really hope he participates in the home run derby next year in Seattle.
It would be so cool. Good. Yeah.
All right, let's pivot from there then.
Okay.
Okay. Next one comes from Darian416 on Twitter. He DM'd us and said, "Hey boys, Red Sox clearly need a rebuild. Boston might legit turn into a bottom tier team if Xander Bogaerts moves on. Plus, their pitching and bullpen is for sure so bad. Unless they open that checkbook and go wild, I think we could see them in the 12 to 15 range record wise in the AL East for a good 2 more years." This, you're stumbling me up here with your wording here. I think we could see them in the 12 to 15 range record wise. What is that?
In the AL is my guess.
Oh, record wise. Gotcha. I was thinking 12 to 15 wins. Sorry. I'm still a little foggy because of this sickness. So
all good. I get what he's saying. So the 12 to, 12 it makes to sense. 15 it makes sense. Teams in the AL. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So like a bottom four team in the American League. Gotcha.
This is an interesting comment, and it's almost tough to argue with. You look at this Boston Red Sox team and how poorly the Trevor Story signing wound up going for them. He wound up not playing good ball until it was almost too late last season. Their pitching has not been very good. Chris Sale just never wound up returning to form or staying healthy. He might be right, man. I don't know how you feel about it, but maybe a rebuild truly is the best thing this Boston Red Sox team can do. Now, they are in a market that probably will lose their mind over that. But if you just look at where they're at, they've got so much money on the books that's doing nothing. JD Martinez is headed out. I don't know, man. Where are you at? Do you think the Red Sox could literally be a bottom feeding team this year, or do you think that they'll spend?
I don't know. If I'm going to be honest, I'm not too familiar with what the like AAA next wave of prospects is like for the Boston Red Sox. For all I know, they've got a Bo and a Vladdy that are going to come up next year, and maybe the plan is to spend. You know, I don't think you go, I know the Trevor Story deal looks bad right now. Like you said, look better towards the end of the year.
Yes, it did.
I like the idea of them being a dead last team. I just have a hard time actually visualizing that. This does feel like a team that is going to make moves. Like who knows? Maybe they move Trevor Story to second base and they go get Carlos Correa. We got a new Texas Rangers situation, right? Like they've got money to spend.
They do have money.
I don't know. It's maybe if there's a Red Sox fan who stumbles backwards into this video by chance, they can educate us on why the Red Sox are poised for a massive bounce back in 2023. I hope it's not a true story, but.
So my cousin, my first cousin, shout out to Cody, huge Red Sox fan. Like, it's one of the things we've bonded about in our adult life is just constantly shit talking each other over text, right? And he is not very hopeful for 2023. Oh. He does not have a lot of faith in Shane Bloom and this Red Sox front office.
Okay.
He's not overly hyped on their farm system. They do have a few prospects worth keeping an eye on, but nothing like you said, where it's like the next wave.
I'm loving what I'm hearing. Shout out to Cody.
Yeah, the Red Sox could be in some trouble, man. We're going to need to wait and find out what they do in the offseason. Obviously, until all the moves are done, it's tough to actually make a educated guess on where they land in the AL. But if you're just looking at this team as is, I think that Darian could be correct that they might be in that bottom rung with Kansas City. And, you know, I don't know, man. We'll need to wait and see.
Well, love it. AL East in general. Do the Orioles take another step forward this year? We know the Yankees are going to be good. We know the Rays are going to be good. Knock on wood, the Blue Jays are going to be good. Right? We're talking 90-plus wins for those three teams. Lock it in. Right? Lock it in. Baltimore Orioles, they were knocking on the door last year.
Yeah, they finished a little above 500. I think it was, what, 83 and 81 or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Do you think they can push 88, 89 wins? Do you think they have the appetite to go out and spend in free agency?
This is, I think, what's going to make the difference is if the Orioles are actually spenders, as some of the speculation has them being, and they are actually going to go out and get a guy like Carlos Correa, who they have been tied to. Yeah, I think they could take another step forward, especially if they bolster their pitching a little bit. Personally, if they don't make any big moves, I think they take a step back. I can't see their pitching being as good as it was last year. I could be completely out to lunch here, but I think that they need to bolster this roster to see another step forward. Where are you at?
I think they're going to make some aggressive moves this offseason.
I kind of get that feeling too.
I feel like they are right at the, you know, they just called up Adley Rutschman. He looks legit. You know, he looks like might be the best catcher in all of baseball. And this is coming from a team that has three really good catchers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a good young core. This is the time to capitalize. Right. So,
and they've got almost no money on the books. Like
that's the thing. They're one of the lowest salaried teams in all of baseball. I think this is like the ideal rebuild strategy for any of these bad teams, whether you're the Marlins or you're whoever, right? Like if you have any sort of a budget, but you're being cheap because your team is bad, is that like you look for a guy in the draft or via trade, a prospect who has that like Hall of Fame trajectory, right?
Right.
And then you just wait until one of them makes their debut and isn't Jared Kelenic, right? Like a guy who makes that transition to the MLB, doesn't skip a beat, looks elite from day one, and then you go, okay, now we go. And that's when you open the checkbook. And, you know, that's what the Blue Jays have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time for the Orioles to follow suit, and that's frustrating for me.
It seems to be what everyone is saying will happen too. So if it doesn't, it's not that the Orioles haven't kicked cans. They just didn't find the fit that they wanted.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think that the Orioles are going to be very active in the next couple months, and I think we could see them make a really big splash that surprises the entire league because they haven't spent over the last years. And if you go back in history, they do have a tendency to spend when they need to. So It's not like they haven't bucked up before.
Yeah.
Could be interesting.
I said it last year. I'll say it again. Carlos Correa to the Baltimore Orioles.
Mm-hmm.
That front office. I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he was, I think, the president or the GM of the Astros when they drafted Correa. Now he's in the Orioles. I don't know. It makes sense. He's a good fit. They have the money to spend. Now is the time to spend. There you go. Breaking news. Carlos Correa, the Baltimore Orioles. All right. Next one comes in from Discord. New to Discord, by the way. So welcome to Jolting Z or Z. Mm-hmm. Discord, by the way, free to join. Free invite in the show notes. We have 200-ish folks
just
in there.
Under 200. So we're climbing every day, and we've had a lot of new people join who have been quite active, which is awesome. Love to see it. So again, welcome to everyone who's new to Discord.
So Cholting says, I may be alone in this assessment, but regardless of the fit of Brandon Nimmo, I'm staying away from that contract. He reminds me so much of Jacoby Ellsbury. Look how that panned out for the Yankees. Three guys that I want most. Number one, Carlos Rodon. So we can go right-handed pitcher Manoa, left-handed pitcher Rodon, right-handed pitcher Gausman in a postseason run. I like that. Mm-hmm. Number two, Cody Bellinger. Reason is financial flexibility. Yep. And acquire another outfield via trade. And then number three, Dansby Swanson, which would slide Bichette to second base. Espinal would then be freed up to be traded for more pitching depth. Will all three happen? Extremely unlikely, but we shall see what happens. So what are your thoughts on this, Scott?
It's an interesting roadmap to how the Blue Jays could go about this offseason. And that's what's really fun about this offseason is that truly this front office has so many different forks in the road that they could do. See, in this scenario for Jolting, what was it? Jolting L?
Jolting Z.
Jolting Z. Wrong letter, Scott. Go to the end of the alphabet. Jolting Z. In this scenario, he's opting out of a high-end contract with Nimmo. Now, I get the Jacoby Ellsbury comparison. I don't think it's fair. I think Brandon Nimmo, however you want to say it, is truly the best option for center field currently with the Toronto Blue Jays. However, he is going to cost an arm and a leg. He really is. I think the market for Nimmo is hot. Once Judge signs, it's really going to kind of solidify itself as he's going to be the top outfielder available in free agency. And I think a lot of the talk is he could get more than a Springer contract. And if it's more than a Springer contract, maybe the way to maximize what you're getting in return is to take the money you would be spending on that and do just like he said, go out and get a Rodon, spend it on pitching, bolster the outfield with a cheap option and maybe through trade, and then go out and move a guy like Espinal for depth pitching. It's an interesting plot twist, if you will. It's something that could work.
Okay, it's a interesting point too that you just made about the market being hot for Brandon Nimmo, because I mean, there's three obvious top teams that are in on Aaron Judge, right? We got the Yankees, we got the Dodgers, we got the San Francisco Giants. You're not in on Aaron Judge unless you need an outfielder. So what happens if you don't get Aaron Judge? You still need an outfielder. Mm-hmm. So that's at least two big market teams who need an outfielder, plus the Mets, who I think are still in on Aaron Judge, even though publicly they've said, we're not going to outbid the Yankees for them. Mm-hmm. I don't buy it. I think if it comes down to it and they have the money to spend, they would on Aaron Judge. That being said, there's three big teams who are going to need an outfielder still. And like, Brandon Nimmo's the guy.
He really is. And this is where you're just going to need to evaluate how much as a front office, irrelevant of the team, how much you're prepared to spend on a guy like Nimmo. Because the truth is, I love Brandon Nimmo in a Blue Jays uniform, 5 years, $125 million. Not a big fan, 8 years, $170 million, right? Like, If they need to go that high, I think the proposition Jolting Zed set up here is more of a direction I'd be interested in taking, where you're using those funds to go out and get a high-end pitcher and then maybe take a step back on your outfield. I know that Craig Ballard just yesterday mentioned that lots of World Series winning teams have been able to hide a extremely valuable defensive player, but an offensive black hole in that number nine spot. We watched the Astros do it with their catcher, with Maldonado. We've seen it before, and this is an option the Blue Jays could go, especially if you're going to have a Carlos Rodon in that rotation. And now you're rolling out Manoah, Gausman, Rodon. When Jose Berríos is your number four, that's pretty deadly.
And it is just funny how the free agency market plays out. And I do think that Brandon Nimmo, like you said, the best fit for the Jays. But also, I don't think he's going to be worth the money that he's going to get. I do think that because of the way the stars are aligning, and this is where free agency is a fickle
such
mistress,
a crapshoot. Yeah.
Right? Is that it is like the stars align for a weird guy where he happens to be a free agent at the right perfect year. You know, like, would Brandon Nimmo have gotten the same number last year versus next year versus this year? I was watching Jean Boy Media, and they were talking about the Cody Bellinger getting DFA'd, but then they brought up, and this was where I'm getting to, the Luke Voit. Mm-hmm. If he had have become a free agent in 2020, he'd have been 29 years old. This was, I mean, the shortened COVID season, so he only hit 22 home runs, but he led all of MLB in home runs in 2020. He wasn't a free agent this year, right?
On pace for over 50, yeah.
But like, that is a really appealing guy who could have gotten, you know, 6 years, $150 million for Luke Voit.
Hey, man, it's a great example. Even if you look at injury, if you look at injuries, Brandon Nimmo only played 91 games in 2021 and didn't have near the season. So if that's his free agent year, all of a sudden he's probably needing to take a show me deal, a short term deal where he can go out and prove himself. But now he played 151. Yep. It's a shallow, it's a shallow outfield in free agency, and he's the top guy.
And who are we to kid? If Aaron Judge didn't just hit 62 home runs, we wouldn't be talking about a $300 million contract coming his way.
Very true.
Right? Like, if he hit 31 home runs this year, which is still a big number, you know, it shaves quite a few dollars off that contract. So very well-timed free agent entering year season. I can't talk right now. You know what I'm getting at.
No, but I do.
Walk year. His walk year, he really stepped up. And
by the way, I do think even though Brandon Nimmo is going to get overpaid, it doesn't mean that it takes his value away. He still has a lot of value, and he still will be a very good player. There's lots of good players that are overpaid. It's just, and there's lots of scenarios where you actually want to go out and overpay for a guy. You look at your current roster, look at the guys who are under control, who aren't ARB eligible. This is why it's so important to have a farm system that's constantly turning out new major league talent, so that you have that controllable and affordable bottom rung of your team, right? Like, even you look at Vlad and Bo Bichette, that's kind of the case for the Blue Jays. Maybe not as much now that they're making more money in arbitration. However, you know, those are the type of guys where you can afford to go out and spend big on a George Springer. So Brandon Nimmo is going to make a pile of money, but it might be money well spent for the right team, depending on the system that they're turning out players in.
There you go. All right.
Liam Hendricks is a good example of that, right? Like, those high-end relievers that, you know, they're being overpaid, but also when it comes down to World Series, relievers win championships. So it's like, where do you overspend?
I don't want Liam Hendricks. I've talked myself right out of Liam Hendricks. All right. Next one comes in from Dulce Maris. Dulce Maris actually left a pile of comments this week.
So thank you, Dulce.
Yeah, helps your algorithm out. Love it. Anyways, big takeaways from all their comments here. The Blue Jays don't, quote, need to trade a catcher. Dulce Maris says the Jays' willingness to play Moreno at second, third, and left field demonstrates they'll find a way to get his bat in the lineup, even if they end up carrying all three catchers. Moreno's defensive versatility makes it possible for the Jays to keep all three. So I don't want to spend too much time on this, Scott, but I want to push back a little bit on the premise here. I know that he did have some gimmick roles towards the end of the season there. He was playing in, I think, second base and left field in the last game of the season and whatever, right? That whole game had a parents versus kids exhibition feel to it. So I don't want to read too much into that there. I know he did play at like third base, some outfield in AAA. I'm still skeptical that that's a legitimate plan forward for the Blue Jays. I think they definitely rather develop him as a catcher. So over under Gabriel Moreno, games started anywhere but catcher slash DH. I'm setting it at 10.5. Are you taking the over or the under?
I take the under.
Me too.
I think he very well could play 8 to 10 games around the diamond. I think it is very possible that maybe he plays DH for half the game. And then if they're up by some runs, maybe they stick him into second as they massage the defense.
Agreed.
But no, I don't think he's going to get a pile of starts anywhere but catcher. I think his arm strength and just what a premium position catcher is. He already has that versatility. There's already value in that. I don't think pushing him to play 20 games at third base is going to do anything for him as a player, and I don't think it's going to do anything for this organization. Now, this could be different in a different organization, by the way. Like, maybe if Moreno does get traded to, let's say, I don't know, the Brewers, and their DH spot is gummed up a little more, maybe they do play him a little bit at second base or left field or whatever. But for the Jays, you just look at this roster, I just don't see how playing Moreno all over the field is going to do anything for this team.
No, especially if they are going to try and develop as a catcher. The number one skill he needs to work on isn't his pop time. It isn't his hitting. It's his calling a game. And you don't practice calling a game while you're standing in left field. So for that reason, I agree with you. I'm out on that. It's definitely the under for me. Let us know in the comments, though. Gabriel Moreno, game started anywhere but catcher in DH, 10.5. You taking the over or the under? Next part from Dulce Maris, talking about the Teoscar Hernandez trade, says the main thing I don't like about the trade is that a deal for a replacement wasn't in place already. Now that the Jays have a great need to replace the Teoscar vacancy, the free agents available and trade partners now have the leverage when Jays try to negotiate deals. The rest of the deal I can live with, because teams trade contracts, not players, and the Jays made a good trade of contracts.
To start I just want to jump in here, Adam, real quick. Just to start with, Dulce Maris truly is an excellent baseball mind. He has been a member of this walk-off community for over 2 years, so he has seen us at our worst. And he always has some really well thought out, really intelligent baseball knowledge and comments to drop. I disagree on this a little bit. I don't know where you're at, Adam. I feel like, so let's just start with George Springer and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. are our everyday outfielders. Biggio can play the outfield. Merrifield can play the outfield. Merrifield is going to be a linchpin in this Blue Jays lineup. I think it's going to surprise Jays fans how much time he plays. He's going to be the everyday second baseman. He's going to get time in center field. I mean, even Dulce mentioned Gabriel Moreno can play left field. Right. I don't think it actually inhibits this Blue Jays team with leverage. And I could be wrong. Who knows? Maybe teams are squeezing them extra hard now. I just think that if a team has an area of need and they want to deal with the Blue Jays, where the Blue Jays area of need is irrelevant to them, as long as the pieces match.
Yeah, that's where I am too, Scott. I disagree with this comment about leverage, painting ourselves into a corner wholeheartedly for basically the same reason. Unless it is a big multi-trade, like you just don't see a lot of trades that, you know, one trade solves all your problems. Like it is always a multi-piece trade for any team, right? If it was the other case, if we had signed a free agent and hadn't gotten rid of Teoscar yet, now you just say the opposite, like the same thing on the opposite side, right? Of, well, now we've lost all of our leverage getting rid of Teoscar because the other team knows that we have to, right? We have too many outfielders. So we've lost all of our leverage in trading one, right? So it's like, This is a damned if you do, damned if you don't, if that's your opinion. And I tend to agree with you, what you were saying about when it does come to other teams looking to fill their vacancies and whatever. I don't think a free agent is going to try and extort the Blue. I don't think Brandon Nimmo, if he's talking with the Blue Jays, when he's going to be offered 6 years, $150 million, looks and goes, well, I see that you guys don't have Teoscar Hernandez anymore. So you guys are screwed. You need me. I need a seventh year. Like, I don't think that's, if he's coming to Toronto anyways, we're already overpaying him. You know what I mean? So
I do. I think
we're already giving him the extra year. Like, so that's just where I'm kind of like, whether it's Cody Bellinger or Brandon Nimmo or whoever it is, anybody that we're in talk with, we're already, their leverage doesn't come from us not having three outfielders. Their leverage comes from the supply and demand of outfielders. And like we just talked about earlier, the fact that the leverage comes from the Dodgers need an outfielder, the fact that the Giants need an outfielder, the fact that the Yankees, the Mets, the list goes on and on, need an outfielder, and there isn't that many good outfielders available. That's where the leverage comes from, regardless of whether we still had Teoscar or not. So
I would agree. And again, we're not in the front office. We have no sources. Maybe this is a legit problem and maybe the Jays did screw themselves over by trading Teoscar too early. But I feel like this front office is savvy enough and experienced enough in the front office in general. I mean, Shapiro built the Guardians for 10 years before moving on to Toronto. I don't see this as something that they would handcuff themselves with, but who knows? Again, I'm not in these negotiations. Maybe they did screw themselves over.
And another factor, I mean, we've talked about this before, is just like the freeing up of money, right? Like they could have just been handcuffed by Rogers. We're like, no, this is your budget. If you want to go out and sign a free agent, you got to cut salary elsewhere. Like it could have just been that simple. Right, where like they didn't have a choice. If they want to go out and get another pitcher, they just had to cut salary, period. So who knows? It's
and maybe it's like mightier minds than ours. Maybe it's like what Craig Ballard mentioned on the show yesterday, where it's not so much that they're handcuffed with money and had to offload that $14 million Teoscar was going to make in this final year of his contract. Maybe it had to do that they've been given their budget. They're taking a look and they're like, you know what? We move a few more dollars off the books and we can go big game hunting. Mm-hmm. We can go out there and actually try and get a Dansby Swanson or a Xander Bogaerts or a Trey Turner. We can actually make a bid for Aaron Judge, well, even though we won't get him. We can at least push the...
Sorry, I'm cutting you off there, Scott.
No, I'm just saying I pushed the price of Judge up. Go ahead, though.
No, just to agree with you, though, is that, you know, that other side of the coin is also having a vacancy. Maybe isn't a leverage weakness. Maybe it's a leverage strength where now we can go to Brandon Nimmo and be like, hey, you get to be our, you know, like it's, you know, sign with us. We have a spot for you. Not a.
We sign promise with us, we'll make then, a spot.
Yeah,
yes.
we'll figure something out, right? It's like a boy who dates a second girl before he dumps his girlfriend, right? It's like, well, that's kind of sleazy. Like, just dump her and then we'll talk, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, anyways, we've talked ourselves into circles here. I just want to touch on one more thing before we move on. This kind of relates on the topic of trading contracts rather than trading players. Mm-hmm. We did do a video last week about a trade for Corbin Burnes that maybe would include Christian Yelich in a way to bring Corbin Burnes' value down, as opposed to us adding more to a trade to match the Corbin Burnes value. So Brewers fans came out strong to light us up for how dumb our trade was. Basically, the trade was this. Alejandro Kirk, interchangeable with Moreno or Jansen or whatever. It is what it is. A Blue Jays catcher for Corbin Burnes and Christian Yelich was the general broad strokes.
And we never mentioned Danny Jansen, by the way. I know Jansen's probably not in that category. It would be
probably
Moreno or Kirk, but
correct.
Yes.
But first, I just wanted to clarify that anytime we do discuss a potential trade, we are only ever going to discuss the big pieces when we're speculating, right? Because nothing puts me or anyone else to sleep faster than listening to the balancing details of a double A guy on this team versus a single A guy on that team versus a, you know, like snooze fest. So, Of course, there is an implication that if it is Kirk for Burnes and Yelich, sure, there is going to be a minor
some
league
sweetness.
Arm or whatever yes. on one side or the other, or multiple pieces on both sides to make both teams feel like it's a fair and balanced trade, etc. So I just want to get that off the table. We're not just saying Kirk for Burnes and Yelich straight across. Of course, there's going to be some seasoning sprinkled in there. Second
also,
of all,
this isn't that crazy of a trade. Go ahead. Sorry, man.
No, this is what the second of all is that I just wanted to point out, because they, you know, they're coming after us like, oh, this isn't a video game. You guys are so dumb. That's so unbalanced. Like Yelich is so good and Burnes is elite and all this stuff for one player. Okay. So we didn't invent the idea of a salary dump trade is the point that I want to like we're not just like outsmarting baseball here. Like we're not pretending to be smarter than we are. We're looking at historic things that have happened and we're looking for patterns. That's all we're doing. Right. So
yeah,
the obvious,
the perfect
comparison here for me. And I know you agree with me on is let me just pull it up here. Ever heard of Mookie Betts?
Right.
So Mookie Betts, superstar with the Boston Red Sox, traded to the Dodgers for Alex Verdugo and a couple of prospects. On top of Mookie Betts, the Red Sox also added superstar pitcher David Price with a massive contract. The Red Sox also paid for half of that contract. So it was a three-way trade. The Twins were involved as well. But
with, like you said, the pieces on top,
the seasoning to balance things out and whatever, right? But basically, the Dodgers got Mookie Betts and David Price and a bunch of cash to pay for Price's contract. The Red Sox got Alex Verdugo, Jeter Downs, and Connor Wong. So Jeter Downs and Connor Wong have each played like 30 to 40 games in the MLB. So those are the minor leaguers that we're not going to speculate on whether it's Adam Kloffenstein or Zach Britton or whoever. It is what it is, right? Alex Verdugo, catcher. He is the Alejandro Kirk comparable. Mm-hmm. Mookie Betts, the superstar, is the Corbin Burnes comparable. And David Price with the bloated, I think it was 7 years, $217 million contract, is the Christian Yelich comparable, who was great, has not lived up to the price of the contract. So
that is the thing. And listen, it's so funny too, because we've done two videos on this, and one video, it was Brewers fans who brought up Yelich, and now they're upset they're not getting enough back. But to offload $150 million. Like, I hate to break it to everybody, this is not a cheap endeavor. Mookie Betts was and is a top 10 player in all of baseball, and then packaged with a hefty salary of David Price, an over-the-hill player who's never going to live up to the remaining money on the contract. Gee, that sounds familiar, right? To Christian Yelich. So again, like Adam said, we didn't invent the salary dump trade. We were just floating because there's nothing going on, no signing. So yeah, we're speculating. Hey, I don't think it's that crazy. I personally.
All right, let's move on from that. We could spend 45 minutes defending old videos, but let's just move on.
Also, we've never said we're geniuses. One thing about this podcast.
Yes, we are openly
dumb. Never stood on a soapbox and told everyone we know better than you.
All right, so this last one then comes from Daniel on Instagram. Says, thanks for this. Thanks for asking Zach Britton for some TV shows and movie recommendations. Cool to connect with these players on stuff other than just baseball. We haven't gotten a recommendation from you fellas in a couple weeks, though. Can I suggest a new segment for Friday's show? I know Adam loves alliteration. So how about what you watching this weekend, which I love, or because Monday morning mailbag is on a Tuesday afternoon. How about what you watching Wednesdays every Friday? And I love that.
I love that too. He really gets those W's in there for you.
Yeah, really gets to the core of who I am and my sense of humor. So thank you, Daniel. He says, keep up the great work. So we'll end on this then, Scott. What are you watching? It's a Tuesday. Well, what you watching Tuesdays?
I just finished watching HBO's Say Hey, Willie Mays. And that was such a fun watch. I am not of a generation that ever got to see Willie Mays or even knew all that much about him. And it was really educational. It was really a fun watch. The dude is just a gem. They've got up close interviews with him and kind of they're talking to, you know, Barry Bonds and different Giants throughout Major League Baseball. They talk about the move of the Giants from New York to San Francisco. It was just honestly, as a baseball fan, I freaking loved it. So Say Hey, Willie Mays. Check it out.
Love it. All right. That's on HBO.
Yeah. So I think it's Crave.
Crave, if you're in Canada and you pay the extra premium for the HBO stuff.
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay. My recommendation is a documentary on Netflix that I watched with my dad last week called Pepsi, Where's My Jet?
Hey, I saw that too. That was awesome.
That was so good, right? So I love true crime documentaries. That's like one of the things that always gets to me. This is kind of that, but there's like no murder or anything.
Yeah.
Like it's one that you can watch with the kids and it's like, it's a fun, but also kind of like frustrating, legal, true crime, whatever thing, and quirky, good characters.
A
lot more to the story than I would have guessed.
So many cool 90s commercials played in totally. There that I was just like, just transported me back to my childhood watching the little chihuahua be like, Yokiro Taco Bell. And I was like, oh, crack, I would have never thought of that in a million years without that.
As soon as I saw that, my brain immediately went to the Barks Have Bite commercial.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So.
All right, there you go. What you watching Wednesdays, every Friday, but it's happening this Tuesday afternoon. So there we go.
Thanks for that. True walk-off fashion. All right, everybody. Thank you so, so much for all of the interaction over the last week. We only managed to probably scratch the surface of most of the comments, but don't take it personally and feel free to join the Discord or the Patreon and move your name up that list of comments that we're getting to. You can always join us. There's a link in the show notes for Discord. Follow us on Twitter, a Walk Off Podcast, Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. All the best, everybody. Take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
With a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.